At 8, wind chill 5 above. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for WGTD's morning show comes from Jack Andrea, featuring unique shopping and the historic Jack's Cafe with an eclectic menu, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, modernized for a new age. Visit jackandrea.com for more information.
And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm really pleased and honored to be speaking with three great people, all of whom have been on the morning show before. Here in the studios, Jim Schatzman, who is director of Racine Vocational Ministries, Carl Fields, who is with us representing Racine Interfaith Coalition, and he is also involved in Racine Vocational Ministries in a very, very big way, and via the telephone, Sister Ann Pratt, who is co-director of the Racine Dominican Center for Justice Resources, which is a new pilot ministry of the Dominicans, and one of the collaborating sponsors for what promises to be an extraordinary year-long exploration of racism in the city of Racine. And this is actually an effort that is already underway. It actually kicked off last month, and there will be various events that will be occurring through the course of this year and into 2021. This effort is titled Opening Our Hearts and Minds to End Racism, a year-long faith-based series of public events and offerings to allow various members of the community to confront the reality of racism as it plays out in all kinds of different ways, as it is experienced, as it is, in a sense, inflicted, and helping all of us understand maybe the ways in which we are unintentionally racist in our thoughts and or our actions. And so I'm very grateful for this opportunity to have this conversation, which actually springs very nicely out of a couple of other recent morning show interviews that we have had on this very topic. And now we get to explore it, in a sense, closer to home. So Jim Schatzman and Carl Fields and Sister Ann Pratt, we welcome all of you to the morning show.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. So Sister Ann Pratt, I know from what you were telling me before we went on the air that you are acting as a facilitator among a relatively long list of different organizations and agencies that are part of this effort. Tell us, first of all, what sort of the initial impetus was to put together this year-long exploration of racism. Did this idea originate with the Dominicans?
Actually, Greg, it's kind of funny. We didn't really intend to have this become this year-long series. I made a phone call back in the fall to Jim and said that I had become aware of the live production of Totem from Slave to Priest and wondered whether there was any possibility of putting it together so that we could do it in Racine. And so Jim then made a few phone calls, and in September we brought a small group, the Racine Interfaith Coalition people and Jim and a couple of other people together and started talking about it. And as we talked about it, not only did the people get on board with this idea of bringing Tolton to Racine, but they also, particularly Racine Interfaith Coalition, had ideas about programs that they really already had access to but had not yet had the opportunity to bring forward to the community in a kind of a different sort of way. And so it just seemed like it, you know, every once in a while something sort of lays itself down in front of you and you pick it up. And I sort of have laughed about this because at times people have picked up the phone and called and said, hey, I want to be part of that. And you know, usually you're kind of having to pull at people to get them involved. But this has been, I think, because of people's awareness of the vulnerability of the community of Racine and surroundings around the issue of racism, it has been an opportunity really to bring together people who already wanted to do something but weren't quite in a position to be able to do them.
So we should mention, I think I neglected to mention it in the introduction, that there is a screening at Siena Center coming up this Sunday and Monday, March 1st and 2nd, about Father Augustus Tolton, the very first black priest in America. And so you're saying what began as just let's show this film became let's explore this more deeply and more widely. And not over the course of a single weekend, but over the course of an entire year. So it began, in a sense, innocently and modestly, and has blossomed into something much deeper and richer.
Exactly.
So, Jim Schatzman, tell us about, for instance, the involvement of Racine Vocational Ministries as part of this.
Well, I would reiterate what Ann said. Sometimes people lay things at your feet and you have a decision to make. And Ann invited me into this process of as her kind of Racine connection to say, you know, do you think this has legs? Who could you talk to? And I had some ideas immediately, which was the co-directors of the Racine Interfaith Coalition. I saw the trailers for the movie, and this is a stunning visual to do a movie with a live actor. And so I was drawn in immediately. I just the beauty of the project and the way that it's shot, the cinematography is just breathtaking. And the script is smart and powerful. And so and movies are kind of my segue into that. That's how I de-stress. And so I was really excited to see this. It just kind of hit on a nerve. And as we reached out to the Interfaith Coalition, and then we started having these conversations. They said, well, you know, we've got this other piece that we thought might work. And so we had that conversation in my office. Then we called Ann, and she said, well, let's put them on the agenda and see what happens. And then Carl came on the committee, and a couple other people came on the committee. And suddenly we have, you know, two meetings later, we've got a year of events, some sponsored by the Racine Interfaith Coalition, and then even connected to the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, who was also doing something fairly substantial in this same area. So Deb Karp came on the committee as well, and so it just grew organically, but it grew exponentially in a very short period of time. We went from showing a movie to more than a year of events to really dig deeply into this, and that's kind of what's the impetus. It's like, this movie's great. It's going to be a wonderful event. Do we want to sponsor an event, or do we really want to create an opportunity in the community to have some pretty courageous dialogue? Mm. I mean, really, you know, I come to this obviously as a white person, but I have an advantage of being in an office with people every day who have experienced racism and had some pretty frank discussions behind closed doors. And as Carl may share at some point, that's often where many of those dialogues happen. They don't happen in the public. Mm. They're just too, it's like a tinderbox. You throw something in, you don't kind of know what's going to happen. And so the Interfaith Coalition and some of the folks at Parkside working with, Racine Library is another one who has actually been able to facilitate some of these discussions. The idea of linking them all together just became, it just was painfully obvious. Mm. And so RVM, as Ann said, kind of became the Racine point person for this idea that Ann and the Dominican Justice Center had begun incubating, and it just took off from there.
Wow. Carl Fields, tell us what your response was to this possibility of being part of something like this.
Oh, I absolutely wanted to learn more about it, and I saw that I had a part to play, but the contribution, like Jim said, is very real. My truth, my experience has value in the work, in that we're able to move the conversation forward, and ultimately we're able to move some real actions. As a movement builder, as a community organizer, we all the time are trying to bring people out of the shadows, because black and brown people, persons of color, have always been put in a position publicly to not have a public life. And so when people reach for that, it's very off-putting to those who have never thought about it out loud, talked about it out loud. So when you see a person, whether it's a directly impacted person who works for like our, you know, who as a client has come to RVM or to KVM here in Kenosha, that person is not just reaching for their freedom and trying to walk the righteous path. They're also trying to overcome a struggle that exists in society that everybody is both a part of and affected by. And so this was absolutely something that I wanted to reach for. I mean, you know, with Racine Interfaith Coalition, Tammy Hayward and Linda Boyle, the co-presidents there, have put in some serious work and some serious time to pull this off and keep the organization and the agenda front and center, which is basically unpacking and upending racism, structural racism, institutional racism. And so this was absolutely, and this was a learning lesson for me, because I had no, you know, direct insight. I consider myself to be a smart person, but I didn't know this story. And so I was happy to embrace it.
Oh, the story of this particular priest.
Yeah. And so, you know, being, you know, a closet square, as I always label myself, I was happy to come on board and learn something, as well as identifying with the story and sharing my truth in relation to that. And that helps to move the work forward, but also helps for those who are impacted to come out or be comfortable enough to do the same thing. So.
For those of you just joining us, we are talking to three guests today who are all involved in a year-long exploration of the reality of racism in Racine. The effort is titled Opening Our Hearts and Minds to End Racism. It began with a keynote speaker's presentation at some point last month, and this weekend there is a screening, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, that presents the story of Father Augustus Tolton, the first black priest in America. And then there are many other events that are scheduled for the remainder of the year. In our studios, Jim Schatzman from Racine Vocational Ministries, Carl Fields from Racine Interfaith Coalition, two of the sponsoring organizations of this effort, and via telephone, Sister Ann Pratt, co-director of the Racine Dominican Center for Justice Resources. Briefly, Sister Ann Pratt, I'm afraid we don't have too much time for this, but I would love for you to share with our listeners a little bit about the Dominican Center for Justice Resources. How and when and why was this created?
For about 2 years, we've been talking about maybe a new ministry that might take us into the future. And, you know, we are facing the reality that many of our sisters at this point are getting older, and, you know, we've always been kind of a hands-on justice community, but at this point we need to reevaluate our resources. And so the Dominican Center for Justice Resources is intended not to be a hands-on ministry, but it's intended to provide the background and structure, the facilitation to help individuals, groups, organizations to do what they already want to do, but perhaps just don't have quite enough either manpower resources or even financial resources to be able to do it. And so it's a way for us to continue to be involved in bringing justice and healing into our communities, and yet recognizing that we have some limitations just because of our getting kind of older and needing to do things in a different way from a new approach.
Hmm. I like that. It's a great idea and a way to remain a vital part of what is going on. I'm looking at this list of the collaborating sponsors for Opening Our Hearts and Minds to End Racism. So it is the Racine Dominican Sisters and Associates, the Racine Interfaith Coalition, the Racine Police Department, the Racine Public Library, Restoration Ministry, Siena Retreat Center, Racine Vocational Ministry, the University of Wisconsin Parkside. There's something really exciting about such a long list. Is there also something a little bit difficult about that long a list for you as the facilitator to keep all of this, in a sense, focused and flowing and moving forward?
Yes and no. You know, I don't know if you realize this, Greg, but I actually live in Sacramento, California.
Right.
And so all of the work that we have done has been done via the internet through Zoom. So we meet together on Zoom meetings, and these people are really just a marvelous group of people. And, you know, when something gets laid down in front of you and you don't really have to ask people, but you just have to say, hey, I need this, and they respond to it, this would not have been possible without the strong backing of this team in Racine who, you know, I do the paperwork and, you know, that kind of stuff, but they really are the ones that have been the face of it and I think are making a true difference in our community.
Hmm. We should take a moment, since we have not talked about it very much, to, and it's one of the reasons why we wanted to be sure that this interview aired today, is because on Sunday, March 1st at 4 p.m. and Monday, March 2nd at 6:30 p.m., there is this presentation on the story of Father Augustus Tolton, the first black priest in America, a film called Tolton, From Slave to Priest. But this is not your everyday film, and certainly the experience that people will have who come to see this at the Siena Center will be probably unlike any film they have ever seen before. Jim Schatzman, it sounds like you're the person who first became aware of this film and this story. So tell us more about it.
Well, Ann brought it to my attention. This is how it was going to start. And so I can just say, from watching the trailers, from reading some of the PR that St. Luke's Productions, who runs this show all over the country, it's just riveting. It's a stunning look. The cinematography is just is stunningly beautiful, and the story is very, very powerful. And the unique thing about this is that this movie is done with a live actor. And so Jim Coleman, I believe he lives in Florida, will be interacting in a multimedia way with the movie itself as Augustus Tolton. And then following the movie, he will be around for a talkback and Q&A. And so this is a really unique opportunity. Ann has actually seen the movie. Ann, did you see this movie in Sacramento? Is that what I remember?
I did. I saw it, the production this fall.
Hmm. So tell us more about it, and maybe tell us more about Father Augustus Tolton, what you think is most important for us to know about his story.
Augustus Tolton was about 8 years old, and he and his mother and father, a couple kids, were living in Missouri. Dad had to go off to war and was killed, and mom was living in a, you know, slave strait at that point in time, and she was very afraid that the family was going to get separated, that the children might get sold off, and so she decided that she was going to leave. And this was, you know, at that very beginning of the Civil War, and so she somehow, with I think a lot of courage and strength, got herself and these children across from Missouri with the Confederate soldiers shooting at them to the other side, to Illinois. And they then lived in Quincy, Illinois, and they had been in a plantation that apparently was Catholic, and so the family was brought into the Catholic faith. And while Tolton was in Quincy, he sometimes was actually able to go to school, and then sometimes they would kick him out, and then, of course, he was working in the fields. But a priest there got very close to him and began to realize that there was something very different about Tolton. And at some point, when he was about 16, they began to talk about him becoming a priest. And no seminary in the United States would take him because of his black being. And they finally had to send him to Rome to be ordained. And then he came back, and he went back directly to Quincy. And he was such a powerful preacher that not only did all the people from all the Catholic churches begin to come to see him, but all the churches came to see him, and they finally ran him out of town. They were going to kill him, and so they took the church took him then to Chicago, and even there it was a real struggle. And he finally they put him on the road as a preacher, but sadly, about 11 years later, he died of heat exhaustion. But the stories of people's commitment to him, 300 of the people from Quincy moved with him to Chicago because they had never, ever had a church where, from a Catholic perspective, where they were ministered to by someone who really lived and understood their very difficult story.
Go ahead.
This is the story of Tolton, and it's a story of him becoming a priest. But for me, even more so, this is a chance to look at what did slavery do to people from both a structural and a systemic experience of it. And, you know, it nearly destroyed what turned out to be a pretty amazing person's ability to become who he was intended to be. And so I think that sometimes Jim mentioned earlier about how vulnerable we are in talking about this issue of racism. And I think sometimes when we can step back a little bit and see it as powerfully displayed as we're going to see it in this presentation, that it helps us recognize that some of that very same kind of thing is going on in our very present day.
Absolutely. I just want to know a little bit more about this film, and Jim already touched on the fact that part of what makes it intriguing is that it is a film on a screen, but there is also a live actor in the room interacting with the film. Can you just enlighten us at least a little bit on what that's all about, and in a sense, how key that is to the impact of this film?
It's kind of interesting because this was actually, Jim, you may know the word for this, but this was actually filmed with a green backing. So there, all the cinematography and everything that Jim is talking about was added into it. So you had the live actors and they filmed this, and then they added in the background. And so when they will when they're showing the film at Siena, the film actually is shown from the back of the screen instead of the front of the screen. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole stage set that we will have to construct on Sunday. And when you come in, you very much think that you are coming to a live performance. And then suddenly there is this really strong added multi-dimensional aspect of it. And there's beautiful, beautiful, haunting historical black music that's part of this. And so you eventually, at the end of the film, really forget who's the real live actor and who's on the film set, because it becomes pretty much melded into one.
Hmm. Sounds fascinating, and I know that already there are a lot of people excited about the chance to see this and to hear this story, which many of us have known nothing about till now. Jim, spell out where people can see this film and if tickets need to be purchased and so on.
It is going to be shown at the Siani Center at on the north side of Racine off of Erie Street. And in the lower level, when people come in off of Erie, there'll be parking in that parking lot right in front of the chapel, and there will be people there to direct them downstairs to where the film is being shown. And you can go to the Dominican Justice website, dcjr@racinedominicans.org, to reserve a ticket. The performance is free. There is no charge. We will be taking a free will offering. We encourage people to go to the website so we have some idea of how to make sure that the hospitality pieces are in place. So you can go to the website and simply sign in that you'd like to come and the number of guests that you'll be bringing.
And that website again is what?
Go ahead, Ann.
It's www.racinedominicans.org/DCJR/. Or they're also available on Eventbrite.
Yeah, on Eventbrite. Very good. We're speaking today with Sister Ann Pratt, co-director of the Racine Dominican Center for Justice Resources, and also with us, Jim Schatzman from Racine Vocational Ministries and Carl Fields from Racine Interfaith Coalition. We're talking not only about the screening of Tolton, From Slave to Priest, which is Sunday afternoon at 4 and Monday evening at 6:30, but also the larger effort about which this is just one component, a year-long exploration of racism titled Opening Our Hearts and Minds to End Racism, with all kinds of different events occurring through the course of this calendar year and into 2021. And this is designed to be a long effort for the community and members of the community to confront the reality of racism, not only as it plays out in the community and in the larger world, but how it also plays out in our own personal lives.
Greg, if I could just mention, Chief Howell is part of our committee, and he has been very important. And he has the opportunity to work with the issue of racism in our community, probably in a very unique kind of way. And he has really been very generous in helping us think and kind of move beyond ourselves. And one of the things that Chief Howell is really concerned about with any of the things that are going on in Racine around the issue of racism is that we don't just go and have these nice experiences and walk away and feel better, but that we actually take some courageous and brave actions, because through our experience of this, we're actually being transformed and become stronger and more able to be able to deal with that. And that's one of the reasons why this series is layered. We started out with kind of a history presentation, and now we're doing this multimedia presentation, but the next presentation after that on April 4th is implicit bias training. And David Liners and Katoya Roberts are coming to spend a whole day with about 60 people to talk intimately with them about the kinds of biases that we don't even know that we have that impact our decision-making and the way we're in relationships with people. And then the next event after that is being coordinated by the Racine Public Library, and we're going to do Racine Reads the book Just Mercy, and that's going to take place all through April. And they're working on getting a grant so that books can be available free of charge. And on April 27th, the film Just Mercy is going to be shown at Racine Public Library. And then the next day there will be a discussion of the book. But you know, Just Mercy really takes on the issue of appropriate incarceration. And, you know, when you look at the issues that lands Racine on that list of being one of the worst places to live, the incarceration rate in the state of Wisconsin is one of the huge factors in that, because we have one of the highest incarceration rates in the United States. And so we think that those kinds of activities are going to take us deeper and deeper into this conversation.
I'm anxious to talk with Carl Fields about the ways in which the reality of racism is something that you as an African-American have experienced very directly on probably all kinds of different levels through the course of what's been, let's call it a complicated life in terms of what you have experienced.
Challenging, yes.
Yes, where you have been and so on. Maybe one of the first questions to ask is, how is it that we, and I guess I'm saying we as in those who are white, how do we tend to misunderstand the nature of racism, of what racism is, and what it is like to, in a sense, experience it on the receiving end, as I'm sure you have countless times.
Indeed. Well, you know, Sister Ann, you know, we love her dearly, and she stole a little bit of my line in there, but that's all right. I knew it was going to come up, so I'm happy that she, you know, was able to put that out there so smoothly and helped me to segue into that. As a person of color, living that or living through that, what we're talking about, racism and the effects of it, it's in the air we breathe, it's in the water we drink, it's a part of every system. And the hard part in the work is that a person, and I encounter a lot of people who aren't racist that I wouldn't consider to be racist. Some of their prejudices might come out, some of their biases may come out, but their value system doesn't lift up racism. And yet they are part of systems that perpetuate racism, whether it's them being in the social services field, whether it's them working in like a workforce development scenario, they're working with a jobs program, they're working in criminal justice in the county jail, you name it. All of these systems were ultimately built for the benefit of one group at the expense of all other groups. And that has always been the reality here, and it continues to be the reality here, and the numbers reflect that. And so that's one of the reasons why we push for this to be front and center. And this is one of those things that everybody wants off the table because it's a non-issue. For those who aren't directly impacted, who aren't minorities, I have an affinity for the work that they do a lot, and I have a lot of allies who do the work genuinely from their priorities perspective, from a principal perspective, and they're the ones who not only help us to keep this on the table, but speak to the fact that the racism that was created as racism is now titled public safety. It's now titled, you know, being fiscally responsible. It has all these different titles now by today's standards that most people would just completely miss it. But from a standpoint of from a regional standpoint, the experience of the work that Sister Ann mentioned, she mentioned two people. She mentioned David and Katoya. David is the executive director of the group called Wisdom, which is our statewide affiliate. Mm-hmm. And Katoya is the former associate director of that same organization. In Racine, it's Rick. But here in Kenosha, it's Kush. I also work with Kush. And with Kush, we have down here, we have Sandy Milligan and we have Kathy Gloff that is doing similar work. And it's the sister organization here in Kenosha, as well as our sister organization here in Kenosha of Kenosha Vocational Ministries. There are all these ties to how to lift up the work. And I hate for it to always come off like we're flashing racism in people's faces. We're asking that a certain reality be acknowledged, that people are not struggling because they're lousy or they're lazy or because they don't want to work or because they're just broken people. We're talking about these lack of opportunities that exist. This story talks about racism and talks about a black man who ultimately had to fight for his dignity and fight for his respect. And he had a whole slew of people to help him do that. And that's community. And that's faith. And that's values. We still need that. And one of the reasons why the Dominicans are such a powerful force in Racine and in our region is because I believe, and I endearingly, you know, love them for it, they do the work unapologetically. And so people know when Sister So-and-so comes in, or Sister Ann comes in, or Sister Jean Berber comes in, you know what you're going to get. So
right. And you know things are going to happen.
That's right. So be prepared if you're not into this sort of thing or into this work. Black and brown people have to live through racism and live the effects of it. Non-minorities can just bypass it and live a life without that. And so us doing this work that we're doing here with this program, with the Totem Viewing, it's not just an event. This is a year-long focus, and ultimately we're asking for a commitment from a whole lot of people, and we're asking for a commitment from the community at large. And my struggle with that is that it seems to have only one lens right now, and that's racism. There are many lenses that go along with this. We're talking about people's values. We're talking about how we live those values, and we show what our values are based on where we put our dollars, based on where we put, you know what I mean, our choices. And we haven't made enough choices to upend the racism that we can prove still exists.
Right.
Can I jump in for a second, too? One of the things that I see at RBM that has made me keenly aware of my own biases and keenly aware of my discomfort at a certain level of the conversation. For many white people, the ability to maintain friendships with people of color, the ability to just have kind of a bias that I'm just a nice person and I'll do what I can do to help you when you're right in front of me, but not do anything to challenge the system that creates and maintains the biases that continue to, that when the person leaves my desk, they are immediately confronted again by the issues. And when they're at my desk, the issues are still there, but we're not really talking about them fully. One-on-one conversations are important. I want to talk about two aspects of this very quickly. One aspect is having that courageous conversation one-on-one with someone you trust. It's a safe place to kind of throw your ideas out there, where when you're dealing with somebody who is aware of the issues, like Carl Fields or Chief Howell, your biases come out and you see them and you speak them and you go, wow, I didn't even know I held that belief that way.
Right.
And I didn't know that belief that I held came off as patronizing or less than effective in actually dealing with the issue. So it's not just acknowledging it. Are we also willing to be a part of dismantling the system that maintains it? And so that is where, for white people, I can tell you that is where the conversation takes courage, because you are going to feel uncomfortable. When you hit that nerve and it starts talking about leveling power bases where most white people are used to operating from, and you're talking about you need to adjust the power so that it's more evenly distributed across people of competence and character. Now I'm talking about giving something away that gives me an advantage right now. And that's what becomes very, very uncomfortable. And right. It becomes very personal.
Scary.
Yeah, that's a conversation about people losing stuff. Mm-hmm. and we're not always talking about that, but we absolutely are talking about equity. And one of the reasons why I like this particular kind of artistic approach is because it's another medium. It's another place where we get to have this conversation, build the base of people who live in their values and live in their truth. But we also get to say flat out that here's the version of it here. Here's the version of it here. And here is why that everyday story of the average person looks the way it do. Because the average person that I know, the numbers reflected, are struggling in Racine or they're just getting by. And that's not a rugged bootstrap thing that can be fixed. There are a whole lot of barriers that exist. Like Jim said, there are a lot of decision makers that we know who make values-based decisions for the person that makes sense equitably. But as soon as they make that decision, there are three other systems that that person has to encounter that are going to undo that.
That are sort of stacked against them in one way or another.
That's right. And so how do we have that conversation without a lot of people who work in these systems, work in these offices, feel like we're calling them racist?
Right. Mm-hmm. I want to draw attention to an interview that I suspect none of you heard, but it aired earlier this week on this program. An interview with a very highly regarded expert on racism named Margaret Anderson, who is a professor emeritus at the University of Delaware. She's written extensively on racism, and her most recent book, which is what we talked about, is titled Getting Smart About Race, An American Conversation. And it's a fascinating book that I recommend to anybody interested in this topic. And it includes an appendix which guides people through what can be very difficult conversations about racism. And I'm really anxious to get your response to a couple of things that she says in this really intriguing book. One of the things she talks about is how racism is really something that exists at the societal level, that prejudice is something that an individual feels when they make prejudgments about somebody based on what their name is or the color of their skin or whatever. But racism is something that society creates and perpetuates. And so when we're talking about racism, we really, much more than an individual person and the prejudices they might harbor, we're talking about the world we have built based on those prejudices and the way that plays out. That's really what racism is. And at one point she says that race is a process, not a thing. It is a process that involves official policies. Race is imposed by powerful people and in some cases is individually chosen. However, defining race happens, society and its systems of power are usually involved. It is a process. It's almost like a living thing. It's not just an object that sits on the shelf. And I found that really intriguing, and I wonder if that sounds like that's a good way to be thinking about this and to attack this.
Oh, no, absolutely. That's absolutely spot on. Our straightforward definition is that racism is prejudice plus power. And racism has wheels because, the policies give it wheels, give it strength, give it economics to back it. It's one thing to feel a certain way about a person or persons who don't look like you. But when you can back that up with making decisions that affect their lives, that cut off or truncate their trajectory, that's racism. And that is a very well-heeled example. And there are thousands of those examples that we can show throughout America. And how that works up until today, Racine is a diverse place. Kenosha is a diverse place. And yet we have all these inequities in places like criminal justice, in places like social justice. And these are also the same categories that once upon a time were the slavery categories. These are the exact same categories of people. It's not coincidental that the same group of black and brown people who were in the shackle are the same black and brown people who are in this system that we call slavery by another name, that we call the new system of slavery. That's not coincidental, and that's not because they're broken people. And I repeat that because that's the narrative that I get. Something's wrong with the 6% of black people that exist in Wisconsin. Something's wrong with them because they, in a disparate way, feel the systems. Mm. And that's their issue. That's not a community issue. That's not a Wisconsin issue. And that is just all the way false. And we need more people who know that to be true to step forward and speak out. And so every single medium that we can find to speak this truth and do this work and bring them into it with us, we're going to keep doing it and we're going to keep inviting them. And so that's I suppose that's the agitation and that's the push that people come out and be willing to open themselves up to watch it and see the film and sign up for one of the later events. But be ready to come and do some work, ultimately, with yourself and with the community.
Yeah, I wonder if... go ahead, Sister Ann.
I think that's one of the reasons why this collaboration has really, as Jim said, it got legs. Because You know, individually, we all have prejudices and biases and that kind of thing. But as Carl says, when those get institutionalized into our laws and our organizations and our structure, they take on, as you were saying, Greg, a life of their own. And, you know, because this collaboration comes at this issue from so many broad perspectives, we really have this unique opportunity to develop something in our community that perhaps will go on beyond this year, because it is getting underneath that individual experience of other people to helping people recognize that the forces that are working against people of color moving forward are so overwhelming that unless we as a whole society choose to join together and heal that and change that, it's not going to change.
Right. And I think what's also difficult is that we're talking about forces that are not wearing white hoods and burning crosses on people's yards. It is something that, if we are careless, can be invisible to the eye. It is sometimes subtle, which does not make it any less serious or potent.
Well, Jim, it's not subtle for the people that are being impacted.
Exactly.
And that's the whole point. I mean, you know, one of the things I remember being stunned when I started this work, that for a convicted felon who comes out of prison and is looking for an opportunity to work, when you do a background check and you see that they have these charges, they immediately fall to the bottom of the pile on the employment side. But what we don't see, and most people are completely unaware of, is that over the course of the last several decades, one of the things that has been removed as an opportunity for felons when they come back is state licensure. And so, for example, the most unrelated thing in the world, you can't get a barber's license. I can't tell you how many people I talk to who have a talent for this and want to do this. As an entrepreneur, they can take control of their opportunity to bring money into their house when employers are saying no. And yet some legislator on the back end of a piece of legislation says, I don't want felons to be able to get a barbering license.
Mm-hmm. And this would be an example of what Carl was saying, where you call that something in the interest of public safety, although it's ridiculous, it seems to me. But I mean, on this, it does not have a name that looks racist. At a glance, it might not seem racist, and yet it is part of this system that perpetuates this racism in our community.
And here we're saying they're lazy, they don't want to get out and work, and we're barring them from the licenses that can get them in an entrepreneurial way, get them started right away.
Exactly.
And
right.
So it just adds another layer. They're not lazy. There's a barrier, a state policy that is actually keeping them from earning a living.
So it sounds like this is going to be an effort that tackles this on this kind of level that we tend not to talk about enough at all. And I appreciate the scope of this challenge, and also the scope of your effort to meet it in a very meaningful way. We want to remind everybody about this year-long project, again, called Opening Our Hearts and Minds to End Racism. And the next installment in this series of programs is this screening of Tolton, From Slave to Priest, telling the story of the first black priest in America, Father Augustus Tolton. Those screenings are Sunday afternoon, March 1st, 4 p.m., Monday evening, 6:30 p.m. At the Siena Center. And you should contact the Siena Center or go to www.racinedominican.org/DCJR/ in order to register your interest in going to this one of these free screenings. And through Eventbrite, you can also register for your free tickets to see that. I want to thank all three of you for joining me today on The Morning Show for a powerful conversation. Sister Ann Pratt, co-director of the Racine Dominican Center for Justice Resources, Carl Fields with Racine Interfaith Coalition, Jim Schatzman with Racine Vocational Ministries. Thank you for being part of The Morning Show today.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll spend part of Monday's morning show talking about the upcoming Thoughts for Food event, which is the major fundraiser for the Racine County Food Bank. Tomorrow on the Morning Show podcast, from the archives of 1997, an interview I recorded with three young people at Racine's Park High School and their teacher, Barb Salvo, talking about the amazing success of that year's Science Olympiad team. They took the state title, triumphing over some larger and wealthier schools, and qualified